Experts claim there is nothing tougher than a diamond. But at Diamonds Direct, we beg to differ. Have you ever met a mother? Strong, radiant, timeless. This Mother's Day, give her the gift that meets her match. With diamond jewelry starting at $200, plus Diamonds Direct's exceptional quality and unbeatable everyday price, you're sure to give her a gift that wows this generation and the next to come. Experience the thrill of jewelry shopping done right at Diamonds Direct. Diamonds Direct. Your love, our passion.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unk, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unk podcast feature casual and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unk, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Looking to part ways with complicated, expensive, and uncertain shipping? Then give your business the edge it needs with USPS Ground Advantage shipping from the United States Postal Service. Keep everything simple with clear upfront pricing and no unexpected surcharges. Keep things affordable with some of the lowest prices out there. And keep it all reliable with on-time ground shipments. It's time to turn shipping to your advantage. Learn how at USPS.com/advantage. USPS Ground Advantage. Simple, affordable, reliable.
Welcome to Stuff You Missed in History Class from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hello and welcome to the podcast. I am Tracy B. Wilson.
And I'm Holly Fry.
And I think I may have been desensitized by living in today's world of spree killings and mass murders. Because when I hear the word massacre, I think of something like the Red Wedding in Game of Thrones.
Right.
Or maybe one of its real world inspirations, which was the 1692 Massacre of Glencoe. And that's when soldiers under Archibald Campbell, who was the 10th Earl of Argyle, slaughtered 38 members of the MacDonald clan.
So you think of something with high volume and pretty aggressive
wholesale killing of basically undefended people.
Yeah.
So the word massacre, it brings up way bloodier images than what really went down in our second most requested massacre topic. The first one being the massacre at Glencoe, which we just mentioned. That's the Boston Massacre, which at the time was known as the Bloody Massacre in King Street. And massacre kind of makes it sound as though it was the wholesale slaughter of a bunch of innocent Bostonians who were just standing around minding their own business. Which is not true at all. It was not at all like that. But there is definitely a reason why we call it the Boston Massacre and not the minor Boston kerfuffle with a few unfortunate casualties. And that reason is propaganda.
Maybe we should start a Facebook page to try to change it to the Boston minor kerfuffle.
With a few unfortunate casualties. Yeah. So, yeah, that's what we're going to talk about today. What actually happened during the Boston Massacre and why we call it a massacre today and not something else.
So we're going to talk about the propaganda aspect, but first we need to put a little context into the situation. So on June 29th of 1767, the British Parliament passed the Townshend Revenue Act with the purpose of raising £40,000 per year to, quote, defray the charge of the administration of justice and the support of civil government. In other words, they needed to offset the British government's cost of running the colonies. And this put a tax on several really common items that were exported to the colonies from Britain.
Here's the actual list. I find this list delightful. For every hundredweight avoirdupois of crown, plate, flint, and white glass, 4 shillings and 8 pence. For every hundredweight avoirdupois of red lead, 2 shillings. For every hundredweight avoirdupois of green glass, 1 shilling and 2 pence. For every 100-weight avoirdupois of white lead, 2 shillings. For every 100-weight avoirdupois of painter's colors, 2 shillings. For every pound-weight avoirdupois of tea, 3 pence. And for every ream of paper, usually called or known by the name of Atlas Fine, 12 shilling. And avoirdupois is basically the pounds and ounces weight system that many of us still use today.
And if you are familiar in any way with the U.S. on the subject of taxes, you can probably imagine how very popular this whole plan was.
Yes.
Which is not at all.
Right. And on top of that, taxation of goods was already an extremely sore subject in the colonies. In 1765, Parliament had passed the Stamp Act, which was a tax on, quote, every skin or piece of vellum or parchment or sheet or piece of paper. And paper and vellum for different uses were subject to different rates of tax. So the Stamp Act was supposed to fund the defense of the American frontier, and the colonies objected to the whole idea of using a tax to raise money rather than to regulate commerce. And the colonies were very concerned about the precedent that this set, that, you know, Britain could just say, here, have a tax now that we are going to use to raise lots of money. This led to the colonists responding to the Stamp Acts with protests and violence. And consequently, Parliament repealed it in 1766, although in basically the same breath, it also passed what was called the Declaratory Acts. And those more or less said, hey, Britain can pass laws for the colonies and the colonies have to follow them. And too bad if you don't like it.
So just a couple of years behind the Stamp Act, which was so very wildly popular, the Townshend Act also went over poorly. So poorly, in fact, that the British government had to send regiments of regulars to Boston just to keep the peace. Customs officials were being harassed and threatened as a result of these taxes, and the governor wanted military help just to help restore order.
So the regulars, who became increasingly known as the Redcoats, started arriving on October 1st of 1768. So you may recall from our recent episode on the Hessians that deploying troops to the colonies from Britain was an extremely long and time-consuming task. So that is why, even though it had been quite a while since the act was passed, many, many months later, did the military show up to try to calm things down.
And the people of Boston did not really like this one bit. On top of the principle of a military force just showing up to make them behave themselves, soldiers were also raising the competition for jobs because they would sometimes take on additional work in their off hours to supplement their income, and they were willing to take less money because they also had their pay as a soldier.
So, consequently, the citizens of Boston greeted the Redcoats with taunts and jeers and a lot of fighting and spitting, and all in all, relationships between the troops and the city went extremely poorly for about 18 months. Before the tensions really started to rise in March of 1770. By this point, people were trying to get shopkeepers to stop selling imported products from Britain entirely, and also vandalizing stores that did carry British products.
So in the days after the massacre, a packet of military depositions was sent back to England, which described the environment this way from the British perspective. Whoever has conversed much with those who have been lately at Boston must know that the arrival of the King's troops at that town in 1768 was exceedingly disgustful to all that part of the people who call themselves the Sons of Liberty and deny the authority of the British Parliament to pass the late acts for imposing duties upon certain articles of trade imported into America, and who certainly form a great majority of the people in that town, though perhaps not of the persons of the best fortunes and most respectable characters in the place. Basically, the rabble are cranky.
That was the British version of story, for sure. So, on March 5th, 1770, that's when the Boston Massacre took place. Captain John Goldfinch was walking down King Street when the wig maker's apprentice, whose name was Edward Garrick, hollered at him that he had not paid for his wig. Captain Goldfinch just ignored him, and so Edward then repeated this accusation to other passersby in a similarly hollering fashion.
So Hugh White, who was the sentry on duty at the customs house, heard this commotion, and he told Edward that the captain, being a gentleman, would of course pay for anything he had bought.
Edward, however, disbelieved that there were any gentlemen among the Redcoats, and he expressed that quite loudly. And that prompted White to leave his post and strike Edward with his musket.
At which point, the crowd, which had already started to gather in response to all of this yelling in the street, started heckling and taunting White. And he returned to his post, loaded his weapon, and called for the main guard.
At roughly the same time, there were crowds having similar altercations with the British at other points nearby in Boston, and there was a lot of hurling of insults and snowballs at the uniformed troops. Someone also rang a fire bell, which prompted even more people to come out into the streets, and this whole giant crowd started to converge on the customs house.
John Adams later called this crowd, quote, a motley rabble of saucy boys, Negroes and mulattoes, Irish teagues and outlandish jacktars.
It was kind of rowdy.
Take that as you will.
In all this commotion, Captain Thomas Preston heard that people were planning to carry White off from his post and murder him. And perhaps while they were at it, they were also going to rob the customs house. So he decided to intervene, and he brought 7 men from the 29th Regiment to back him up.
At that point, the crowd had started throwing snowballs, which sounds not so terrible, but then also sticks, rocks, oyster shells, ouch, and whatever else was at hand. The soldiers arranged themselves in a kind of half circle facing out to the crowd.
So we're leaning on unreliable, almost 250-year-old eyewitness testimony here, so it's a little unclear exactly who did what to cause the first shot to be fired. We do know that a man named Crispus Attucks, who was carrying a club, approached the soldiers and grabbed one of their bayonets, and that soldier Hugh Montgomery was knocked down. When Montgomery got up, he fired his musket kind of at the general direction of the crowd, and he shouted for others to fire. They did, even as Captain Preston was yelling orders for them to hold their fire.
And then there was general chaos and shooting and sort of a big mass.
The melee.
Melee is the perfect word.
A fray.
And that went on with some confusion until the dust settled.
3 men died at the scene. These were Crispus Attucks, Samuel Gray, and James Caldwell. Crispus Attucks was the son of an African man and a Native American woman. He was the first to fall after being shot twice in the chest. He has since become known as the Revolution's first hero, and we don't really know much about his life before the massacre, except that he had escaped from slavery and found work as a whaler and a rope maker.
In addition to the fatalities, 8 other people were injured, and Samuel Maverick and Patrick Carr ended up dying of their injuries later.
That brings the death toll of the Boston Massacre to 5. A warrant was issued for the arrest of Captain Preston a little after midnight that night. Pretty much the only way they were able to get the crowd to go back about their business was to reassure them that, yes, there would be an investigation and that these men would see justice done.
I'm Tracy V. Wilson from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Did you know small businesses make up 99.9% of all businesses in the United States? The world is powered by entrepreneurs, and if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out Season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks. And every episode, hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres talk to entrepreneurs about how they've grown from the lessons of launching and nurturing a small business, and how they have found success being their own boss. From the excitement of first starting out to finding the right tools and resources to process invoices and payments like QuickBooks Money, you won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too. And if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out Season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There is still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. If you use paper, you're a human. But if you choose paper, you're a papertarian, someone who lives a paper-based lifestyle because it has a positive impact on the planet. And also because it's the easiest choice you'll make all day, seriously. It's as easy as reaching for boxed instead of bottled water. It's as easy as opting for beauty products that come in paper packaging. It's as easy as grabbing eggs in a cardboard container. And that's all in one trip to the grocery store, which, if everyone's being honest, you were planning to go to anyway. But paper isn't just an easy choice. Papertarians know that it's the smart choice, too. Because paper comes from trees, a renewable and sustainably managed resource, and paper products are designed to be recycled. In fact, when you choose products that come in paper-based packaging, those fibers can go on to be recycled up to 7 times. So why wouldn't you go papertarian? Learn more at howlifeunfolds.com/papertarian.
Focus Features presents Back to Black.
I want people to hear my voice and just forget their troubles.
Experience the music and her story.
Know this, I ain't no Spice Girl.
Like never before.
That's my daughter, that's my Amy.
On the big screen.
I want to be remembered for just being me.
Amy Winehouse, Back to Black, directed by Sam Taylor Johnson. Rated R, under 17, not a minute without parent. Only in theaters May 17th.
So, in response to the killings, the people of Boston demanded that the soldiers who had participated in the shooting, along with their captain, be tried for murder. Captain Preston and his 8 soldiers were indicted on March 13th, although the trial was put off for several months to allow the town's passions to cool down, and they all remained in jail in the interim.
Preston wrote letters from his jail cell, and some of them were published in the Boston papers, and those that had been published expressed empathy for the citizens and those who had fallen. While on the other hand, a letter that was published back in England was basically pretty scathing. And naturally, word got back to the colonies about that one, and that did not really help his case.
Nope.
He was kind of talking out of both sides of his mouth.
The citizens of Boston also demanded that the British troops be removed. And eventually, fearing further retaliation, acting Governor Thomas Hutchinson and Colonel Dalrymple, who was in charge of the units, had the troops removed to Castle William, which is on an island 3 miles out in Boston Harbor.
Captain Preston and the soldiers were arraigned on September 7th, and they all pled not guilty.
Captain Preston was tried for murder in October of 1770, separately from the other soldiers. The soldiers had requested that they all be tried together. Their defense was that they were just following orders, and Preston's defense was that he had not actually given an order to fire. So the soldiers were really understandably afraid that if Preston was tried first and then found guilty, that they would automatically be guilty with no possible way to prove their innocence. Their request, though, was denied with no explanation.
And as you can imagine, they had a hard time finding legal representation in Boston. Most lawyers feared that they would never work again if they dared to defend these soldiers. And in the end, leading the defense for both the captain and his men was John Adams. Robert Achmuty and Hosiah Quincy Jr. helped defend the captain, and Quincy and Samson Salter Blowers helped defend the soldiers.
So there was a transcription presumably made of Captain Preston's trial, and that has not survived until today, but we know the basics. Eyewitnesses for the defense insisted that Captain Preston had not ordered for anyone to fire. On the other hand, eyewitnesses for the prosecution insisted that he had. Adams' defense relied on raising doubts about the testimony of the prosecution's witnesses.
And the captain's trial lasted from October 24th to October 30th, with the sequestered jury eventually finding him not guilty.
This was a shock to many people.
Yeah.
The 8 British soldiers were tried as well in November and December of 1770, and the trial was officially known as Rex versus Weems et al. The transcript of this trial still exists today, and their defense hinged on the idea that the soldiers were firing in self-defense.
6 of the soldiers were acquitted on the grounds that they were defending themselves. In John Adams' words, quote, "If an assault was made to endanger their lives, the law is clear, they had a right to kill in their own defense. If it was not so severe as to endanger their lives, yet if they were assaulted at all, struck and abused by blows of any sort, by snowballs, oyster shells, cinders, clubs, or sticks of any kind, this was a provocation, for which the law reduces the offense of killing down to manslaughter, in consideration of those passions in our nature which cannot be eradicated."
So while 6 of the soldiers were acquitted, 2 of them were indeed convicted of manslaughter, and at their sentencing they pled the benefit of clergy. Laws at the time basically allowed for clergy to receive more lenient sentencing, especially when it came to the death penalty. And this allowance had, over many centuries, come to apply to all kinds of people in all kinds of situations. So pleading the benefit of clergy reduced their sentence to having the letter M branded onto their thumbs.
So they would be marked forever as manslaughterers.
On their thumbs.
Yeah. John Adams, as you can imagine, initially faced hostility for his role in the trials, but his defense of the soldiers was eventually viewed as something of an act of bravery. And then, of course, he became George Washington's vice president and then the second president of the United States. So it did not really taint his reputation as much as people had expected.
In the end, no. And in the, today it's become an example in law schools sometimes of an example of when somebody has defended, a clearly unpopular choice of someone to defend, in the interest of making sure that person got actual justice. John Adams later wrote this in his diary. "The part that I took in defense of Captain Preston and the soldiers procured me anxiety and obloquy enough. It was, however, one of the most gallant, generous, manly, and disinterested actions of my whole life, and one of the best pieces of service I ever rendered my country. Judgment of death against those soldiers would have been as foul a stain upon this country as the executions of the Quakers or witches anciently."
But the bigger impact of this massacre was its influence on the American Revolution. The dead became martyrs, and the incident raised a rallying cry for independence. And one of the many people stirring the pot was John Hancock, who had become a vocal opponent of the British after his sloop, the Liberty, was seized after its cargo of wine was unloaded without Hancock paying the duties on it. So he had not paid his taxes.
No.
And his ship was taken.
He objected to that idea. Paul Revere created an engraving which shows a line of British soldiers in their red coats just firing indiscriminately at a huge crowd of people. It ran under the name The Bloody Massacre Perpetrated in King Street, Boston.
Samuel Adams also contributed to the massacre moniker, writing letters in the Boston Gazette, as well as helping to pen, quote, "a short narrative of the horrid massacre in Boston, perpetrated on the evening of the 5th day of March, 1770, by soldiers of the 29th Regiment, with which the 14th Regiment were then quartered there, with some observations on the state of things prior to that catastrophe," also known as "a short narrative of the horrid massacre in Boston." Because that first title is a little wordy.
Extremely long.
The British counterpart to this pamphlet was the set of depositions we read from earlier, and that was titled "A Fair Account of the Late Unhappy Disturbance at Boston in New England."
Yes.
Perspective changes everything.
They did not call this the Boston Massacre in Britain. They called it, like, the incident in Boston.
Yeah.
It was not referred to as a massacre at all. And basically the reason why we in the United States call it a massacre is because Paul Revere and Samuel Adams were basically acting like spin doctors.
Yeah, they were propagandizing the event.
Yes. If you were angry about spin in the news,
it's not news.
It is absolutely not a new thing at all. And one of the things that was just the best part of researching this episode is the fact that most of these pamphlets still exist. And you can
look them up.
And you can see the blindingly different interpretations of what happened.
I'm Tracy V. Wilson from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Did you know small businesses make up 99.9% of all businesses in the United States? The world is powered by entrepreneurs. And if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks. And every episode, hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres talk to entrepreneurs about how they've grown from the lessons of launching and nurturing a small business and how they have found success being their own boss. From the excitement of first starting out to finding the right tools and resources to process invoices and payments like QuickBooks Money, you won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too. And if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There is still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. If you use paper, you're a human. But if you choose paper, you're a papertarian, someone who lives a paper-based lifestyle because it has a positive impact on the planet. And also because it's the easiest choice you'll make all day, seriously. It's as easy as reaching for boxed instead of bottled water. It's as easy as opting for beauty products that come in paper packaging. It's as easy as grabbing eggs in a cardboard container. And that's all in one trip to the grocery store, which, if everyone's being honest, you were planning to go to anyway. But paper isn't just an easy choice. Papertarians know that it's the smart choice, too. Because paper comes from trees, a renewable and sustainably managed resource, and paper products are designed to be recycled. In fact, when you choose products that come in paper-based packaging, those fibers can go on to be recycled up to 7 times. So why wouldn't you go papertarian? Learn more at howlifeunfolds.com/papertarian.
Focus Features presents Back to Black.
I want people to hear my voice and just forget their troubles.
Experience the music and her story.
Know this, I ain't no Spice Girl.
Like never before.
That's my daughter, that's my Amy.
On the big screen.
I want to be remembered for just being me.
Amy Winehouse, Back to Black, directed by Sam Taylor Johnson. Rated R, under 17, not a minute without parent. Only in theaters May 17th.
For a number of years after, March 5th was a day of remembrance in Massachusetts. The site of the massacre is a spot on the Freedom Trail that still exists, and a memorial to Crispus Attucks was erected in Boston Commons in 1888 over the opposition of historical organizations that viewed him as a villain, not a hero.
Yeah, it's because the records of that day are so clouded and fuzzy.
Mm-hmm.
There are people who see Crispus Attucks as, like, the first real patriot dying in the Revolution. Like, he was the person that
stood up to the Redcoats.
You could really look at the same accounts and more arrive at the idea that that he was basically the guy that threw a first punch and in a bar fight.
Yeah.
And in that bar fight, throwing the first punch hit a cop.
Like, right.
That you could really look at it either way. But he does wind up with also a notable place as being one of the first African Americans to have played a big role in that way in the Revolution. So there are lots of layers there.
And luckily, you can do plenty of looking around at a lot of this stuff, as Tracy mentioned just a moment ago. The Massachusetts Historical Society has a bunch of these documents all grouped together in one easy-to-find place. And they're kind of hilarious, not only because of the obvious slant and spinning that's going on depending on who's writing, but also because of, as Tracy says, the long S's that look like F's.
Yes.
And we'll link you to that in the show notes.
We will. There's also the Bostonian Society has made a game that is meant for elementary and middle school students that's all about investigating the massacre, which is pretty fun. I did not play all the way through it, but it basically is like, hey, you're an investigator. You got to figure out what happened at this massacre.
That's very fun.
It's quite fun.
And a cool way to engage kids and adults, frankly, about learning about history.
Yeah,
every historical event had one of those, that would be so awesome.
I wanted to do the whole thing, but I really, really, really needed to finish my notes so that I could go home. So yes, the Boston Massacre. I polled some random people as I got into this story.
Yeah,
I was like, hey, how many people do you think got killed at the Boston Massacre?
Hundreds.
Well, nobody said hundreds, but most people came up with a number that was more than 20.
Yeah.
And when I said five, they were like, really?
Yeah.
So I don't want to belittle the fact that five human beings lost their lives. Like, that's not the point. The point is more that massacre is a great big bloody word.
Yeah.
And what happened was much more like a street brawl with casualties.
Yeah. It was an incident that went poorly, but it was not kind of the big, huge... I mean, it probably took moments.
Yes.
And was not quite the event that the word massacre conjures in most people's minds.
Right, right.
So with that, do you also have some listener mail?
I do. I have two brief pieces of listener mail that are both about our two-part episode on Audre Lorde. The first one is from Amy, and Amy says, hey ladies, I just wanted to give you a shout-out about the Audre Lorde podcast. I'm currently a student studying and living in the city of Cuernavaca, Mexico. And I just wanted to let you know that, yes, it is about an hour and a half to get to Mexico City because, although Google Maps says an hour, the entire route is through the mountains and has a lot of switchback highway curves, so you can't actually go the speed limit. Therefore, it would probably take about the same amount of time in the 50s if they still had the toll roads when you get on and off the highway. Many of the people who live in Cuernavaca work in Mexico City because the climate in the community is better here than in the cold, bustling city of DF, also known as Distrito Federal. There is still a large expatriate community here, although I have not actively been seeking out other Americans, I am told that there's a fairly substantial community in the city. I just wanted to let you know about the city I have grown to love more and more each day. Thanks, ladies. Amy.
Cool.
Thanks, Amy.
Mm-hmm. That will save us the drive down to test it.
Let's do that. The history road trip.
Okay.
Just to see how long it takes to go from Mexico City.
I would love to do wacky history road trips for things exactly like that. Just to test.
Let's see how long this would take. That reminds me of after our Johnny Appleseed podcast, we had somebody write in and talk about a trip they were taking, on foot, to retrace the Appleseed route.
Yeah.
Which is pretty cool.
And whether or not it was actually viable for him to have done what people said he did.
Yes. Our second note is from Dan, and it came to us in our Facebook inbox. And Dan says, I really loved the two-parter on Audre Lorde. I wanted to tip you guys off to part of Lorde's intellectual legacy that I've been writing about a lot recently. I defended my doctoral dissertation on the history of African-American AIDS activism last week. And one of my chapters covered a movement of black gay men in the late 1980s and early 1990s called the Black Gay Renaissance. They were deeply influenced by Lorde and women from the kitchen table circle, including Barbara Smith, Sherry Moraga, and Gloria Anzaldúa. They applied the idea of intersectionality to HIV/AIDS prevention, arguing that black gay men were subject to a unique set of social and psychological pressures because of their multiple marginalized identities, putting them at high risk for HIV. They also produced a lot of art aimed at raising the visibility of black gay men. Notable names include Joseph Beame, Essex Hemphill, Esoto Saint, and filmmaker Marlon Riggs. Maybe they could be the subject of a future episode. Thanks again for enlightening us about Audre Lorde. I love this letter.
Yeah.
Because there's so much focus on Audre Lorde's impact in the worlds of literature and like the women's movement and feminism and especially black feminism. there's so much focus on women and gay women that I had not actually heard about any influence that had instead to do with men.
I had not either. So that was wonderful insight.
It was. So thank you so much, Dan. I think that sounds like a fascinating doctoral dissertation.
Yes, and also congrats on defending your thesis.
Indeed.
Mazel.
Yes. So if you would like to write to us about this or anything else, you can. We are at historypodcast@discovery.com. We're also on Facebook at facebook.com/historyclassstuff and on Twitter at Missed in History. Our Tumblr is missedinhistory.tumblr.com, and we are pinning things away on Pinterest. If you would like to learn about another watershed moment in the history of the American Revolution, you can come to our website and put the words Boston Tea Party in our search bar, and you will find an article called How the Boston Tea Party Works. You can do all of that and a whole lot more at our website, which is howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com.
This episode of Stuff You Missed in History Class is brought to you by Lynda.com. You can learn it at Lynda.com, an online learning company with more than 77,000 video tutorials that teach software, creative, and business skills. Membership starts at $25 a month and provides unlimited 24/7 access to top-quality video courses taught by expert instructors with real-world experience. Listeners of Stuff You Missed in History Class can try Lynda.com free for 7 days by visiting Lynda.com/historystuff.
We are the voice of NASCAR.
The green flag is in the air, and we are underway the great American race.
The Motor Racing Network. NASCAR Cup, Xfinity, and Craftsman Truck Series Racing live on your hometown radio station and MRN or NASCAR.com. Martinsville, Talladega, the Chicago Street Course. We have the side-by-side action and last lap passes for the win.
Photo finishes. Ryan Blaney will win.
The voice of NASCAR, the Motor Racing Network. Work.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.